Okay, so next week we'll do Esther. There's so much on Esther, so you never know exactly what to do with it. But we'll see if we can get some new insights into it. Now, right, David Foreman on Esther has more, I think, than anything else that he writes. And every time he introduces it with what I think is an important point, which is we fall prey to what he calls the lullaby effect, right, which is stories that we know well, we tend to read, and, it's like a lullaby. He puts us to sleep. We know what's coming. So we don't even ask the question. Things don't jump out at us. That should jump out at us if we had waited the first time to read it till we were, 20, when we were thinking critically. But by the time we start thinking critically, we've heard the story over and over, and then so nothing surprises us, so we don't think about it. Now, Esther, of all books in Tanakh, is like the number one up there. We start, it's like, it's a great story, and we can get really into it as kids, and therefore by the time we start thinking about it, there's, we are so sold on what is going on in the story that we forget that it's really not obvious at all. So what I want to do is, in the next 2 weeks, focus on different aspects of the Megillah that are actually surprising. We'll see what parts we do. I have some ideas of which things to bring out, but we'll see as we go through. Okay. So the first thing that I want to focus on, and this is also from Foreman, but it's one of his, which he didn't turn into video, so it's less well known, but I think it's worth focusing on.
What's it called?
What?
Do you know what it's called?
This one? I'll send you which one it is. Okay. So he's like 11 different pieces on it. And it specifically focuses on three themes in the Megillah that are very surprising. Right? Now, one theme that it focuses on, we all know, right? One of the themes of the Megillah from the beginning to the end is the notion of v'nahafochu, right? Is that everything turns upside down. One of my favorite illustrations of this is what Yoni Grossman points out in the book, is that the framing of the Megillah in terms of gender roles is that right off the bat you hear that all women have to listen to what their husbands say, and then the rest of the book continues to function where men think that they're doing what they want to be doing, and they're always being manipulated by the women in the story. And the book actually frames it that way. The Megillah just is, for me, that scene in My Big Fat Greek Wedding where they want Tula to go work in the travel agency, but they need to convince her father that it's a good idea. So they're trying to figure out how to do it, and they're like, well, how are we going to do it? He needs to make all the decisions. He's the head of the family. And the mother says, it's true. The man is the head of the family, but the mother is the neck, and she turns the head out in whatever direction she wants. And that's basically the Megillah, right? And it comes across very strikingly that it opens with the notion that husbands tell their wives what to do, and the whole book then functions on the premise that Ahasuerus is being manipulated and Haman is being manipulated by his wife, right? Because his downfall comes because Zeres said, well, yeah, it's a great idea in the middle of the night to go build a gallows and knock on the king's door at 1 o'clock in the morning. The whole story basically functions on that theme. So that theme we know. But there's another theme that comes out, or another two themes that come out in the Megillah that are specifically reversals of each other. Now, so specifically it's the following, right? There's why is Purim called Purim according to the Megillah? Right, Hilvavar, Al Shem HaPur, because of the poor. Right, now that already tells you that one of the themes of the Megillah is chance. Is randomness. That part of the whole plan of Haman was to destroy the Jews in a way which is random, and he does that through the poor. And if you think about it, it's great psychological warfare, right? This is not like a well planned out thing that you can figure out how to undo it. Like, everything is just random. I'm gonna cast a lottery, and whatever day comes up with, that's when you're gonna die. Everything's just subject to chance. And that is that pasuk tells you that that's a theme in Purim and in the Megillah. But then when you actually think about it, that is one of the themes of the Megillah, right? Everything happens, seemingly by chance, Right? Mordechai happens to be there when Bigthan and Teresh are plotting to kill the king. And the, you know, Haman happens to knock on the king's door when, or be in the, you know, king's courtyard when the king happens to not be able to sleep and is thinking about Mordechai, and that leads to the to him leading Mordechai through the streets. Right? And when you think about it, it's not just that the Jews are going to be destroyed on a day chosen by chance, but the whole story sort of runs by chance. But there's another theme, a third theme in the Megillah, that comes up by the sheer number of times this word is mentioned in the Megillah, and that is the word dat. Well, melech for sure. But one we don't think about is dat. Right? The word that comes up a lot is dat. Right? Dat means ostensibly law. Right? Now, if you take those three themes in Megillah, law, chance, and reversal, the way Ray Forman does it, he said if you try to create a sentence with those three words, right, could you create a sentence with those three words? Law, reversal, and chance. Said, right, yeah. Law is the reverse of chance, and chance is the reverse of law. Right? Law is meant to imply order. Right? Law moves us away from the state of nature. If you look at, you know, Hobbes and all and Rousseau and all the early political theorists, right? The original state of the world was dog eat dog. Everyone does whatever they need to get ahead. There's no predictability. There's no order. There's no nothing. And eventually people can't live in that dog eat dog world where everything is random and everything is by who's powerful that day and everything is social Darwinism. So we come up with laws so that we can have society, so that things can function, that things are predictable, that, right, we come up with, right, criminal law, we come up with civil law, we come up with everything so that the world makes sense, the world is ordered, right? And chance is the opposite of that, right? Anarchy, everything is just, right, whoever's powerful today wins. There's no, it's not predictable, it's not everything comes according to set protocols. So he suggests that really the whole Megillah functions along that axis, that law and chance and the opposite relationships between them are a theme in the Megillah. But in what sense? And that's really what I want to explore. So what I want to do is focus really on the word dot, right? A theme in the Megillah seems to be this notion of law, except it seems to be a very strange notion of law. So if we open the Megillah, right, so right off the bat, Ahasuerus is the king of 127 kingdoms, and then the third year of his reign, so he makes a big party. And then in Pasuk, Chet, when describing the party, he says as follows, right, Hashtia, Vashtia, Kadat, Enones, right, drinking will be according to the law, with no coercion, kichein yisad hamelech al kol rav beito laasod kirtzon ish veish, because that is what the king had decreed on his entire whole household to do what each person wants. Well, that's the first time the word dot comes up. Now, what's weird about that law? Right, this is like the framing. Right, we're at the party, and there's a law. Right, that a law that no one will be coerced to drink. Instead, you do what everybody wants. Now, what type of law is that? Right? What's the problem with that as law?
It's not enforceable.
Right, first of all, it's not enforceable, but even more than that, why do you even think it should be? Meaning, I don't go to a party, right? If you go to a Shabbos meal, no one says, in our house, we don't force anybody to drink. Of course you don't force anybody to drink. Who thinks you would force anybody to drink? Right? Why do you need a formal decree from the king that we're going to not force anybody to drink? And instead, what are we going to do? Everyone can do whatever they want. Right? The law here, A, is on something that shouldn't be law, but also the law is the opposite of what law normally is. Right? Law is normally everyone has to do the same thing. Right? Everyone has to follow the rules. Here, it seems like the assumption was everyone should do the same thing, and then you had to establish a law that everybody does whatever they want. And so right off the bat, 8 psukim in, you find out that law in Persia, people have this weird conception that law enables people to do whatever they want. which is the exact opposite of what law is supposed to do. Law is supposed to constrain you and make you do what other people do. But the first law we hear in the book is that people do whatever they want. A few psukim later, we get law again thrown into absolute chaos. Okay, so if we look at pasuk yigimel, or pasuk yudbet, we'll start pasuk yudbet. Vatemeina malka vashti lavo bedvar hamelach asher biyada sarisim vayktof hamelach maod vechamata ba'arabo. So the queen Vashti refuses to come, and the king gets really angry, and his wrath is burning within him. So now, what should happen right now? Right, there's a marital dispute between the king and the queen. Right, what? Right, who should be brought in to deal with that dispute?
The two of them,
and maybe, I don't know if they had these in the ancient world, a marriage council, whatever they had in the ancient. I don't know what they had in the ancient world, but fine. Who does he call in instead? Vayomer amelech lachachamim yodei aitim ki chein dvar amelech lifnei kol yodei dat vadin. He calls in all the experts who knew the times, who knew the procedures, who knew law and judgment. Right? The experts of law are brought in to adjudicate in a marital dispute. The Megillah goes out of your way to tell you, it's not any lawyers. Right? This is the Supreme Court of Persia. He pulls in the Supreme Court to deal with what he should do with his wife. Kidat ma lasot. What is the proper law? Bamalka vashti al asher lo asta en ma'amar ha-melech ha-chashverosh b'yana sarisim. Right, what is the law? What should you do to Malka, the queen Vashti? She didn't listen to what the king said. And then we get the law. Vayomer mimuchan lefnei ha-melech vasarim. So mimuchan says to the king, now, we have to imagine for a moment, is what is this Supreme Court even thinking, right? It's the Supreme Court, it's the cabinet, I don't know what it is. What are they even thinking? Like, what are they supposed to say, right? The king has, in his drunken wrath, called in the Supreme Court and the cabinet to figure out what to do in his marital dispute. Now, if they say anything, they're going to look ridiculous. And what are they weighing in on what the king should do in his marital dispute? Right? Why did he call in all the top legal officials in the country to deal with something that's outside of the realm of law? What's the only solution? Right? You can't not say anything. The king wants you to say something. But you can't say anything because this isn't really a lawyer's job. This isn't the cabinet's job. So what are you going to say? Pretend that it is about law. Right? Pretend it is about law. So what does he say? Vayomer melech lachan, I got it. Lifnei melech vasarim. Lo ala melech levado aftaf ashti. This isn't a local dispute between Achashverosh and his wife, right? Avashti amalka ki al kol asarim val kol amim asher b'chol midinot hamelech v'achashverosh. This was an affront to all officers in all nations under Achashverosh's rule. Ki yitzei dvar amalka al kol anashim lavzot balayen beinahem b'amram hamelech Achashverosh amar laviet v'ashti amalka lefnav lova. Because everybody's going to hear that she didn't come, and wives are going to disgrace their husbands. V'hayom azeh tomarna sarot paras umaday asher shamu edvar ha-malka l'chol sarei ha-melech u'chdai v'zeyon v'katzev, and everyone will hear, it'll be disgraceful. So im al ha-melech tov, so it's good for the king, yetzei dvar malchud milfanav v'katev bidatei paras umaday. And there's that word again, to set a law in all of paras umaday v'lo ya'avor, that cannot be violated. Asher lo tavo vashti lefnei hamelech achashverosh u'malchuta yitein hamelech liruta tova mimenu. Make a law, right, about the fact that Vashti didn't come, and therefore her power should be taken from her and given to someone better than her. V'nishma pitgam hamelech asher yaseh b'chol malchuto ki rabahi v'chol nashem yitnu yachar v'alehen limi gadol v'ad katan. And then everyone will hear, and they'll set the law. The law will be that wives have to respect their husbands. That was great to the whole cabinet. They set it a law that every husband should rule in his own house. So in the first perek, right, we have this notion of dot come up, but it's a total twisting, an adulteration of what the law, what law is supposed to be. Law is supposed to be what makes everyone do the same thing. And now here's the real question. Why is it that we say that law makes everyone do the same thing? Because what are we afraid of?
Anarchy?
Yeah, we're afraid of everyone doing whatever they want, right? If there's no law, everyone does whatever they want, and everyone kills each other. It's the state of nature. Whoever is powerful wins. But in Persia, law is used in the exact opposite way, right? We find it in Pasuk Chet that law isn't everyone should do the same thing. It's the law is everyone does whatever they want. And then the second time we get law, we find the same phenomenon. That what does the king want to do? He wants to work out his own anger. Now, in Canadian law, right, if a husband wanted to kill his wife because she didn't come to a party, right, he couldn't because it's illegal. Right? It's against the law. The law is meant to stop people from acting on their basis nature. Here, what does Achashverosh do? He wants to act on his basis nature, so what does he do? He establishes law. The law is a veil for anarchy, for chaos, for everybody doing whatever they want. Right? Law is meant to constrain people, to keep people away from doing whatever their most base desires tell them to do. And here, law in Persia is a veil which allows people to get away with doing whatever they want with nobody realizing that it's a personal vendetta. Right? Because here, Achashverosh wants to get back at his wife, so instead of saying, I'm angry at my wife, I'm going to punish her, right? Memuchan comes up with this brilliant idea. Let's pretend that Vashti's rebellion against the queen is in fact a rebellion of women against men, and therefore establish a law so that Vashti is in fact violating the fundamental laws of society, and therefore she's just representative. But in the end of the day, the law wasn't constraining Achashverosh, it was giving him an excuse to do exactly what he wanted, right? But under the guise of propriety. And then, if you continue through the Megillah, you realize that that theme comes up, and right over and over in the Megillah. So, for example, in Pasuk Chet, right, Vayhi bi shamat dvar hamelech viddato uvikabetz narot rabot al shushan viral yadei gai v'telkach esher al bein hamelech al yadei gai shemar nashim. The next law we have is that all women should come to the harem of the king so that he can sleep with whoever he wants, right? Now, normally law is supposed to constrain that type of thing. Like someone wants to just sleep with any woman that he wants, there are laws against that, laws of rape and the like. Here he passes a law that enables him to do that. And then, right, we get dot again. Pasuk Yud Bet. Vagia torna arav and arav of all a melech achashverosh miket heyot la dat kidat hanashim shneimasar chodesh kichen yimleu yimei merukehen shishach hadashim b'shemen hamor v'shishach hadashim b'samim tamerukeh hanashim. Right, when the next time you get law, and this time law is sort of functioning like it should. Right, everyone has to do the same thing. But what is the first time we hear that law? Everyone has to do the same thing. They all the women have to go and get the exact number, same number of months of makeup and perfume and prepare to sleep with the king because he just wants to sleep with beautiful women, right? Laws are being passed for things which shouldn't have law, right? Law is, so far what we've had is we've had a law passed that you're allowed to not drink if you want to, right? Which is weird because why is there laws about drinking and why is the law that you're allowed to not drink, right? Like, what was the assumption that everyone would be compelled to drink? No, you can drink as little or as much as you want. And then, you have a marital dispute between the husband and wife, between the king and queen. And instead of dealing with it between themselves or with a marriage counselor, they establish a law for the whole country that men are rulers in their house, and if women don't listen, they get punished to justify his anger against Vashti. And then you have a law that the king gets to sleep with whoever he wants with no constraints. And then you have a law that all those women that he's going to sleep with must go and have perfume for this many months and this many, right, and go and have perfume and make up it for this many months in exactly this way. That's the laws you have in Persia. And over you get this notion that law is just a cover in Persia for what people want to do, right? Law, which is supposed to bring order to society, is the mechanism that Ahasuerus uses to do whatever he wants under the cover of propriety, to pretend that this is a law, this is a society, when it's obviously not. And then, you know, you get the greatest example of that mechanism, which is Haman, right? Haman, he's told that there's a law that everyone has to bow to him. Mordechai doesn't bow to him. So instead of taking out his vendetta on Mordechai, what does he do? Right? He does exactly what Ahasuerus did. He says, I'm not going to kill Mordechai because then everyone loads a personal vendetta. What should I do instead? Right? I'm going to kill his whole nation. And how am I going to do it? I'm going to do it, right, with under the pretense of law. Pasuk Chet, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chet. Vayomer Haman la melech Ahasuerus. Yeshno am echad mefuzar mefurad bein ha'amim v'chol medinot malchutecha. There's a nation spread out amongst your whole nation. V'dateihem shonot mikol am v'datei ha'melech einam osim v'lamelech ein shoveh l'hanicham. Right? There's a nation which violates your laws. What laws? Right? Right? The arbitrariness of, what was the law that he's really upset about? That what did he do? That one person didn't bow to him. Right, there's an arbitrary law that Ahasuerus said that Haman, everyone bows to Haman, one person did it, and now he wants to kill him, but he can't do it. Right? He can't directly carry out his vendetta against Mordechai. So what does he do? What everyone else does in Persia. He sets up a veil of law. Look, there are these anarchists in society, a whole nation of anarchists. It's not worth keeping them alive. I'm going to kill all of them. And then if you skip right to the Pasuk Tez Vav, Haratzim yatzu tchufim b'dvar ha-melech, v'hadad nidnan b'shushan b'irav, ha-melech v'aman yashu l'shtod v'ir shoshan avocha. Because the Jews don't keep the dat, so we set a dat, right? We set a new law, which again is exactly like the Vashti law, where one person annoyed Haman, but instead of him, right, he just couldn't admit that he just wanted to take revenge against Mordechai. So instead, what he does is what he does, what everyone else does in Persia. You make up a law, right? You come up with a legal justification for what you're doing. You pretend what you're doing is all in the straight and narrow, right? I'm not taking revenge against Mordechai. There's a whole nation of people who don't keep the laws of Persia. Why don't they keep the laws of Persia? Of course they don't, because the laws of Persia are anarchy, and the Jews have rules. Of course they don't keep the laws of the king, right? Their philosophy of law is the inverse of the philosophy of law in Persia. Right, Mordechai actually stood up for himself. That's very bad. Right, you don't stand up for yourself in Persia, right? And therefore he sets a law in the classic way of Persia to cover his revenge against Mordechai. So what Rav Forman suggests is that that Haman and Persia have the following philosophy of life, right? Law, which is normally meant to be what makes there be order in society, that makes it that people are constrained by the basis of nature, they don't believe in that. Right? There's no such thing. Right? What the world really runs with is desire. Right? We got in Pasuk Chet. Right? Everyone does. Right, lasso, kirton, ish ve'ish. Whatever anyone wants to do, that's what you do. That's the life has no order. There's no direction. The only thing that matters is what you want to do. Right? Law, which is normally about order, which is normally about keeping society together, is just a tool that people have to manipulate the world so that it does exactly what they want. But really, the world is pure chaos and pure anarchy, and whoever is on top will use whatever tools, including law, to his advantage to make sure that he gets what he wants, and he'll do it under the cover of law. But the way the world really works is the powerful get their way, right? And there is no law, right? There really is no law. It looks like there's law, but there is no law, right? There is no direction to the world. Whoever is most powerful gets their way. Now, how does that become the clearest, right? And that is what we started with. Haman, how does he decide to destroy the Jews? He feels poor, right? That's his philosophy of life. It's not just that law means nothing. It's there is no order. There's no predictability in life. And if I'm going to take a vendetta, it's going to be random, right? It's going to look like it's not random because I'm going to make a law about it. But how am I going to make a law about destroying the Jews? I'm not going to plan a date. I'm not going to figure out what day works. I'm going to take a lottery and I'm going to throw it down. Whatever date comes up, if it's the 13th of Adar, then that's when I'm going to kill you because it's going to become a law. Right, but there's no rhyme or reason behind it. The real law in the world is simply the powerful win, and that's it. And that's his philosophy of the world. But Mordechai has the exact opposite philosophy of life. Now, people like to say that the message of the Haggadah is that there's no chance in life. There's no chance.
Megillah.
There's no chance. I'm already preparing my Pesach shiurim too. You know, there's no chance in life. Right? That everything is right. God ordains everything. Right. But if you actually read what is perhaps the climactic scene in the Megillah, you find out that the exact opposite is true. The exact opposite is true. Right. Now we'll look at these pesukim in a moment. But if I asked you, okay. So the law is about to happen, and now we're getting to Perek Daled, which is the climax, right? When Mordechai confronts Esther and tells her, you have to save the Jews. So if you wanted to convince Esther, right, what would you do? Right, Esther's going to come back to you and say, there's a law in Persia. Here we go again, right? There's a law in Persia that anyone who comes to the king, right, dato, right, asher lo yikare achat dato lahamit. There's one law, which is you'll die, unless he doesn't want you to die, right? That's sort of totally in step with law in Persia, right? The law is you'll die unless he doesn't want you to die. Okay, great, fine. And I haven't been called in 30 days, and therefore I'm basically going to go soon. So if you were Mordechai and you wanted to convince Esther to save the Jewish people, what would you say? Don't say what he says. I would never say what he says. What would you say, right? What would you say? Why do you have to risk your life now to go and save the Jews? Because otherwise...
Because otherwise all the Jews will die.
He actually says...
It'll come from somewhere.
He says the opposite. He says the exact opposite. Right? He says to her, Vayigidu l'mordechai d'vrei Esther, Reperek dalet pasuk yudbet, Vayomer mordechai l'ashiv el Esther, Al tetami v'nafsheich, Limaleit beit ha-melech b'chol ha-yudim. Don't care about your own blood. Don't think you're going to save yourself. Why? If you're quiet now you expect the next line to be all the Jews will die, so don't care about your own life. And he says, nah, don't worry, everything will be fine, but you'll die. Maybe this is why you're queen, right? I would have said, go. God made you queen because of right now, if you don't do it, we're all going to die. He says the opposite. He says, if you don't do it, someone else would. And it could be this is why you're queen, or it could not be that that's why you're queen. I don't really know. Right? Mi yodem ekeit gazot l'gam achud. Vatomer Esther l'ashiv el Mordechai. Now, that wouldn't have inspired me, right? I just said, especially since, remember, the decree isn't going to take place for another 11 months. It's not like she expects to go in the next few days. Right? She says, I haven't been there in a month, just wait. It's not like it's tomorrow, right? He's telling her, we'll be saved anyways, it's about you, and it's in 11 months. So I would have said, great, so I'll wait 3-4 days. And she says, no, Leich kenoset kol yudim, anim tzim b'shushan, v'tzumu alay al tochlu, al tishtu, shloshit amim, laila v'yom, gam aniv en arotay etzum kain, etc., etc. I'm going to do it right now. And you look at the Pesukim, and we don't think about this, right? Because we're so used to it. It's a climactic moment. When we're summarizing in our heads, what we think Mordechai says is, if you don't do it, everyone's going to die. But you look at the Pesukim, he says the opposite. He says, if you don't do it, no one will die. It doesn't matter what you do, right? Only you'll die, right? And she just said she'll die if she does go. He says, nah, you'll die if you don't go, right? But the rest of us are going to be totally fine. And you look at it and you're like, what is Mordechai thinking? Right? What is his philosophy of life that he can say that? And that it resonates with Esther. So Rav Forman says very sharply here is that Mordechai has the following philosophy of life. It's very clear in these Pesukim. The world has order. and law. And if God doesn't want the Jews to die, they're not going to die. How? I don't know. It doesn't even matter. The world, Bigadol, has order. The specifics are up to chance. It's basically chance. It's chance in the sense that God doesn't care how it's going to happen. We care. Meaning, Esther, look, if God doesn't want the Jews to die, they're not going to die. And if he does want them to die, they're going to die. But I assume he doesn't want them to die, so they're not going to die. The world has order. The only thing that's left to chance, that's left to our choices, is what role we're going to have in that. Is do you want to take part in it? You don't want to take part? Don't take part. The Jews will be fine, but you won't be fine. Because that's what God leaves up to quote-unquote chance. Is what role are human beings going to decide to take in this drama? You don't want to be part of the drama? Don't be part of the drama. Go ahead. Do whatever you want. I don't even know if this is why you were supposed to be queen. But you have a chance now, right? And if you do it this way, then you will be the way that the Jews are saved. If you don't, the Jews will be saved and you won't get to be part of it. It's totally up to you. It's totally up to chance right now. Take your pick. I don't know what you're going to say. I know what the result is, but I don't know how it's going to happen. You get to decide. And you think about it, Mordechai and Haman are actual opposites. And Haman says, the world has no direction. Has no direction. Whatever the powerful person wants at any given moment is what happens. The specifics, there's order to. Because once the powerful person wants something to happen, he'll create a law. He'll use order to pretend that there's order in the specifics, but there really isn't. Right? There's no direction to the world, right? It's just the powerful. The things which look like order are tools to allow the powerful to shape history however they want. And Mordechai is the exact opposite. The world has order. There is a law to an order to the world. There is a direction the world is going to take. And if God wants a result to happen, it'll happen. What's left up to chance is not, right, is how are we going to take part in that which is already planned? Are we going to say, I don't, right, there's 50 options here, but I want to choose the one that allows me to be part of it. I don't need to, but I'm going to do it anyways. Right, and they're actual inverses. Right? Haman thinks that the world has no direction, right? And therefore even that which looks like it has direction and is ordered and is planned, meaning dot, is really just a facade for chaos and for social Darwinism and for the powerful getting their way. And therefore, how is the destruction of the Jews going to be decided? A law, which is decided by a lottery. Because it's going to look like there's order, but there's no order. There's nothing except my desire to destroy Mordechai and anybody that I need to make it look like it makes sense. But in truth, the world comes down to a poor. Right? The world is all chance. It's all whoever's powerful in any given moment, he's going to get his way. Achashverosh is angry at his wife, so we'll set up a law so that he can cover the fact that all really he wanted to do was take revenge against his wife. There's going to be a law about how much perfume a woman needs to wear to hide the fact that it's just the king being sex hungry and therefore calling all the beautiful women, the whole country, so that he can be with them. Right? Law is just a tool, but the world is just about what powerful people want. And Mordechai says, no, the exact opposite is true. The world has a direction. There's a plan. God has a plan for the world. What's left to chance? It's not the end goal, like Haman thinks. It's the means. God said, yeah, I have a plan for the world. I don't care how we get there. As far as I'm concerned, it's up to chance. But what's the chance? The opposite of what Haman thought the world's about. Haman thinks the world, the end goal of the world is whatever the powerful want it to be. Mordechai says, no, the end goal of the world is whatever God wants it to be. The means that are up to chance are whether human beings are going to bother taking responsibility and throw them themselves into the mix. If they are selfless, then they'll be remembered. If not, they won't. Right? Haman thinks the world is just about the powerful pretending to following law just for self-aggrandizement. Mordechai thinks people have legitimate options to decide whether or not they're going to be part of the divine plan. If they want to be, great. If they don't want to be, so don't do it. But the only way you're going to get greatness is by sacrificing and choosing to be part of the divine plan, even though you know the world could go in a different direction. Right? So what he argues, and I think is a very powerful read of the Megillah, is that the Megillah is playing on those three themes, on chance, law, and reversal. Right? Is that Haman represents one philosophy of the world, that the big picture is chaos. Right? The big picture is that the powerful get whatever they want. And in order to cover for that, right, you use law. And you twist law, you reverse law. Right? Law is meant to bring order, it's meant to rein people in. So we use law in the opposite way of the way it's supposed to be. Right? We pretend that there's an order to the world to cover for the fact that the powerful are just getting their way whenever they want. And every time a powerful person wants to get his way, he'll institute a law. Because then he can pretend that it's not him. He can pretend it's about policy for the whole country, when it's obviously not.
You can take, I mean, this example, I'm thinking of Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
They passed laws to...
Exactly, right? You get, you know, right? It's a law, right? It's, what do you mean? We're not, it's not that we're anti-Jew, it's that we, you know, we're making laws for the Aryan race, right? And, you know, it's, and you use whatever mechanisms you can. If it's law, if it's, right? It's whatever it is, right? It's, you know, it's almost like, it's basically what the Supreme Court, it's, what is it, the federal court said on Donald Trump's policy with the, right, with the immigration, right? Is, you said your entire campaign, it was an anti-Muslim ban, and now you're saying it's not an anti-Muslim ban. You're saying it's a ban against terrorism from these seven countries, right? And they said, well, you can't, right? And the, right, yeah, I guess it's a good example, whatever, right? That the administration said to the court, what do you mean? Nothing in the text says that it's anti-Muslim, so it's not anti-constitutional. It says that it's a security ban. It's from seven countries that have been designated as dangerous countries. And therefore, forget the fact that I spent the whole campaign saying that I was going to put in a Muslim ban, and forget that members of my administration have said that. It's not in the text of the law, right? The text of the law is totally fair. The text of the law is totally honest. The text of the law is just about security. And the court responded, no, you can't divorce that from the reality of the last year and a half. You said over and over that it's a Muslim ban. Well, therefore, I don't care what the law looks like. This is just a cover for you doing something unconstitutional, right? Which is banning Muslims from the country, right? Now, whether you, whichever side you think is right, that was the dispute. Right, was what the court was saying was you're using law as a cover for an unconstitutional sentiment. Well, that's basically what Haman does, and Ahasuerus do through the whole thing. Right? They start with their conclusion. What is it the powerful person wants? And then they come up with, they get a hire good lawyers, right, to come up with very good looking legislation that makes it look as if it's not about what it's about. And that's his philosophy of life. The world is whatever I want it to be. Law is just a tool in my book. Right? It's just a tool in my toolbox. I can make the world look whatever I want. And Mordechai comes and says, no, the exact opposite is true. The world has a direction. There is law and order. There is sense to the universe. Like, if God doesn't want the Jews to die, they're not going to die. I don't care now how it's going to happen. I don't know, but it's not going to happen because the powerful are doing whatever they want. It's going to happen because the powerless take responsibility, or the powerful take responsibility for the powerless, really. Right? If people take responsibility, then they will have the opportunity. Right? They will choose the direction of the world, and they'll bring it to fruition, but it could have gone a different way. People choose to be part of the law and order of the world in order not to save others, to save themselves, to make sure that their life is meaningful, right? By choosing not to care about yourself, but to care about the big picture and be part of the big picture, right? That's how you don't save others. You save yourself. And that's really the theme of the Megillah, is presenting two reversed visions of the world, right? Is it that the world isn't going anywhere, right? And everything that exists, whether it seems like it's about law and order and it seems direction, is just a facade, right? and therefore be scared, right? Be scared, because I'm just going to throw the lottery, and whatever day it happens, you're going to die, and there's nothing you can do about it because I'm on top. Or is it, no, we believe that there's a law and order to the world. There's logic to the world. It's going in a certain direction. Our responsibility is to do the opposite of what Haman thinks, right? Not to use the world in a self-serving way, but to recognize that the world doesn't need us. We need for ourselves to take responsibility. We need not to just care about ourselves so that we won't be lost, that we'll have meaning in our lives. And therefore, he suggests the whole Megillah hangs on those three words, right? Is that chance is the reversal of law, and law is the reversal of chance, right? And that Haman chooses, right, to turn law into chance to get his way, right? And Mordechai chooses to recognize that even those things which are up to chance, right, your goal in life is to use, right, is to take your chances, is to take your opportunities in service of the larger picture, even if you don't have to, because you want to. And therefore, they have opposite philosophies of life that Megillah is playing with, and the goal is really to come out on the Mordechai side and not the Haman side of the equation. And he said, and through that lens, right, you really understand the rest of the book, because then you realize that all the quote unquote accidents in the Megillah are accidental in the sense it didn't happen to happen this way, but it's exactly what Mordechai said, right? I don't know how the Jews are going to be saved. I only know the end goal. Everything else is up to chance. Everything else is an accident, right? It could happen in whatever way it's going to happen. All I know is at the end, God is going to save the Jews. How is it going to happen? Well, if you want it, it'll be you. But it'll also be a subject of things that seem like accidents, but they're not, right? That Haman, right, decides to get angry and storm into the courtyard the day that the king happens to be awake all night, right? That's chance. And Mordechai with Bigthan and Teresh, and you know, Zeresh will happen to tell him to build, you know, the gallows, which Hatach will see, and Harvona will see, and tell the king at just the right moment when he's angry. Right, everything seems to happen by chance, but the only thing you know from Perek Dalet until the end is where it's going to end. You have no idea what's going to happen. It's going to be through a series of accidents. But you know that the world is going in a direction, and the people who choose to take responsibility for others and not to be self-serving are the ones going to come out on top. So I always think that's an interesting sort of lens to see the Megillah through. And next week, I guess we'll take another lens to see the Megillah. Okay.